that when I sat down and thought about the fact that I've had issues with my right leg over this year, for those who know that I've had issues for a while already, and then my son had this issue with his right leg, so I definitely got worried. There was no question that I got worried. And I went to Ravina in Eretz Yisrael, the Rashiva of Nitiv Aryeh. I told Ravina, you know, what I was thinking, and I said, you know, I'd like to see a Makobel. I want to know what you think. Do you think it's a good idea for me to go to Makobel? Ravina said, first of all, if you're Jewish, it's a good idea. I don't want to give his high voice, no, not, but first of all, you're Jewish. It's good to be worried. That's the first thing. He said, second of all, he said, I know the person you should go to. I think you should go speak to this Rav that I have, this Makobel in Eretz Yisrael. Now, I had always planned on going to Makobel, but part of the schmooze is based on the fact that what happened, I want to discuss the whole inyan of going to Makobel and what happens when you go to Makobel and etc. and stuff like that. So, I'll tell you what happened. Ravina got off the phone. He went on the phone. He went on two phones at the same time, trying to get a hold of two different people. He got a hold of the gabbai for Rav Alfasi. And he said, here's a person who I pay to learn in the yeshiva from 2 o'clock until 6 o'clock in the morning, every single night. And he turned to me and he said, because I want there to be more kedusha in the base medrash. You understand that, right? And I said, I understand that. I wish I had that at Skokie, but you know, Mikubalim or not. Not very many in here in Chicago, but I'm sure there are other guys that are learning from 2 to 6 a.m., but you know, that's there. And he told me, you have to go right now. So I said, right now? He said, right now. I said, all right, I'll go right now. So I went to go see Rav Alfasi. He lives in Yerushalayim right by Moshe Rav Kook. He has an apartment right over there. And I'll be honest with you, when I went in to go see Rav Alfasi, I kind of expected something different. Maybe it's because I've seen Rav Kaduri before. I've seen pictures of the Baba Sali, right? We've all seen pictures of different Mekubalim, and we have this vision of what they look like. The person who answered the door looked like a Sephardi dad. Just a dad. You know what I'm saying? Just a regular person. I mean, the beard was not so long. He was wearing a regular white shirt and pants. I was expecting a robe and a turban. There was no robe. There was no turban. There was no anything crazy. He looked like a normal person, right? And he opened up the door. And the first thought that came to my head is, this guy stays up from 2 o'clock to 6 a.m. every single morning and learns in yeshiva. That's pretty amazing. Second thought that popped into my head was, he looks like a dentist. That was the second thing that popped into my head. Third thing that popped in my head was, he could probably read my mind. That was the third thing. And then I was a little embarrassed, but I said, all right, I can go through with this. He led me into his study, wherever it was, you know, where he was learning. And I sat down, he sat me down, and again, I'm expecting more, you know, malachim surrounding him. I'm sure there were malachim surrounding him. I just didn't see these malachim surrounding him, you know, and that's my fault. That's not his. That's my bad. But I walked in, I sat down, he closed his sefer, which was clearly Kabbalah, Hinas something or other that he was reading that I'd never heard of before in my life, and I've heard a lot about Kabbalistic Sfarim, right? And I told him my story, you know, with me and my right leg, my son and his right leg. I said, what's Chuck? So he told me, you have to check your mezuzahs at home. That was the line that he said to me. The first thing he said was, you have to check your mezuzahs. And he told me that there is something specific that you should look for. And you should look for two different issues. And one of the issues was that there is going to be something with a lamed. That there's going to be a lamed that's off. That's what he told me. And I tried asking him, because this is the way that I am, I said, why? Why is it a lamed? And he said, the lamed is something that has to do with walking. I don't quite understand that. I don't know. I don't know what he meant by that. He then told me that if I'm going to redo mezuzahs, I should switch around the ches. It's an interesting call. I don't know how this works halachically, and I didn't ask Rabbi Kursky. I'm not actually doing this part. But he told me to switch around. Instead of making two zions with a little thing on top, because a ches really is two zions, and then a little thing on top that connects the two, he told me to make a zion and a vav. And he said the vav is a pillar of strength. And therefore, you should put that there, and the ches should be made of a zion and a vav. I didn't ask halachically whether that was good or not. He's a makobel. That's what these guys do. So I didn't ask that question, and I didn't go through it. And the truth is, the one part of Mishnah Berurah that I've never done, and I don't plan on doing anytime soon, is the tzuras osios and chelik aleph. That's one of the things that, like, I know it's chatayim eskerayom. It's just one of the things that's there. So that's that. He then told me that after that, I should try to look through and go through, and then I should tell my son to give a little bit of money every single day into a pushka box and to use that money to buy a lulav and esrog this coming up Sukkot, and that by Sukkot everything should be okay. I mean, so then I asked again, what's with the lulav and esrog? And he said, this makes sense, actually. The lulav stands for the spine of a human being. It helps you stand up straight. I don't mean, when I say it makes sense, I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all. I'm just saying that, you know, the lulav stands up straight, etc. And then in Esther, Hadassim, and Arabos, etc. I understand. I somewhat can get that. And he tried to explain it to me. But again, I'm an Amharic when it comes to stuff like this. I have absolutely no idea what he really said. But that's that. We had a good conversation. That was that. And we ended up leaving. I was extremely impressed with my grasp of the Hebrew language, that I still had it a little bit, that I could speak in Hebrew the entire time. I was good, and that ended it. I also got on the phone to talk to Rav Druk. Somebody told me that I should talk to Rav Druk, and I did. Now, Rav Druk is a Talmud of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky, obviously, everybody knows, son of the Stipler, living in Bnei Brak. Rav Druk is his Talmud. Rav Chaim Kanievsky visits Rav Druk over Chol HaMoed, or he had once. I don't know if it happened more than once, but he visited Rav Druk on Chol HaMoed. He obviously felt that Rav Druk is a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He's a Rosh Yeshiva that works in Bnei Brak. He has one or two yeshivas in Bnei Brak. It was not very clear about what it was. And supposedly, he is a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Now, I've seen him. He comes to Chicago. He stays by the Atkins. He's around here in Chicago. So I have seen him before, and I've been extremely impressed with what he does and how he does things. There's other stories that I have with him that are somewhat amazing. But nonetheless, I got on the phone with him. I told him the issue. He asked me for my name again. He asked me for my son's name. And he looked at both of the names, and then he's obviously over the phone, and he said to me, it's in the mezuzahs, it's a lamed. So I said, well, that's interesting. I said, what does that mean that it's in a lamed? He said, my theory is that it's in the word uvelechtecha bederech. You should look for that lamed and that there's a psul there. But it's a lamed, you should look around in the mizuzah and you'll see that there's a psul. As soon as you find it, then you'll be perfectly fine. He said, I didn't go on with him because once I had already heard it from Rav Avazi and then I heard it again. So I got off the phone with Rav Druk and I called up my wife and I said, all right, take down the mizuzahs. Right? And if you need help, ask my father to come help you. Take down the mezuzahs and bring them into Betzalel Shur, who checks the mezuzahs. I said, go do it as soon as you can. And you bring it over to Betzalel Shur. So I did not tell my wife anything. I didn't tell my father anything. I didn't tell Betzalel Shur anything. I didn't say anything whatsoever. He went to go check them and he brought them back. And he told me there was one that was totally puzzled. And the reason why it was totally possible is because it had two lamids that were touching each other. It was not in the word of Lechtecha Bederech. Okay? That was there. The other thing was, that's one thing. The other thing was that there was a lamid, and a lamid, there's technically two tagim on a lamid. One is on the left-hand side, one is on the right-hand side. The tag usually goes straight up or leans to the left. This tag was leaning to the right. So there were tagim on each one of the lamed, which were written in the wrong way. I don't know how you want to put it, whether it was melted in the other way, or it changed in the other way, or it was written originally in the wrong way, whatever it was, that's that. There were other little issues. So I ordered brand new mezuzahs. I ordered everything. And then I told Betzalel what these two people had told me. Right, that they had both told me. And he said, that's absolutely amazing. I've heard stories like that. He told me a couple of stories about what ended up happening with Mikubalim when it comes to stuff like this. The truth is that it got me thinking for a while, what does this all mean? How do these people work? How do they do that? Now, the truth is, when you deal with this, you can just go to the Gemara. It's a straight-out Gemara and Brachos. Straight-out Gemara and Brachos, where Rav and Abaye were seeing dreams, and they took the dreams over to Bar Hadya. Now, I am very confused as to how this happened. Rav kept not paying Bar Hadya, and Abaye paid Bar Hadya. So everything that Abaye saw, even though Abaye and Rav were seeing the exact same dream, everything that Abaye saw was translated for the good. Everything that Rav saw was translated for the bad. And it goes through how each one, they saw the same pasuk, the same thing, the same whatever, one after the other, and each one, Rav is being translated badly, Abaye is being translated good, and so finally Rav realized and retranslated it. Started to pay money for it. Once he started paying money, then all of a sudden the dreams were translated. So one of the lines that he told him is that he saw a chamor standing on a rock and braying out. And Bar Hadya told him, Peter Chamor that's written in your tefillin has a psul in it. There's Peter Chamor that's written in your tefillin that has a psul in it. And he said, I checked. Rav said, I checked my tefillin. I checked it, and I saw that there wasn't a psul. And then there's a kasha, how to be able to read the Gemara. He said, Vadai the vav of Peter Chamor is goit mitzkocha. Now, there's a question what that means. There is no vav in the word petrachamor. It's not written that way. It's written ches memresh. So what does he mean by goyit mitfilcho? Was there an actual vav? Was it a cutoff vav? Was there something wrong? Whatever it means, but there's something there. Meaning, this concept of there's something wrong with your tefillin, your mezuzah, there's something wrong with that, is already a concept that's brought into the Gemara. That's already brought inside the Gemara itself. So we're not dealing with something that's so far off where this is an impossibility. That happened from Bar Hadia based on a dream. He was able to see it in the dream itself. So I can understand that somewhat. I somewhat get that. But nonetheless, what still remains is, what is this power? What do they do? Rav Ovadia Yosef, this biography that I think some of you got over, I don't remember, was a year ago or 2 years ago, in Rav Ovadia Yosef, on page 104. I'm going to read it, and I normally don't read, I usually summarize, but I think it was written well enough. It's art scrolls, edited well, right? And I wanted to copy it, but then I realized that I'd be cursed for life and possibly wouldn't ever be buried if I copied art scrolls, so I decided I wasn't going to copy art scroll either. So I'm just going to read it out, okay? In his teenage years, Rav Ovadia would spend long hours in the library of Beit Knesset Shoshana Mudavid. I do like it that art school for Rav Ovadia Yosef's paper writes everything with a tuf instead of a suf. So either way, taking advantage of its extensive library, but the roof of the Beit Knesset leaked terribly during the winter rains. So Rav Ovadia related to his son Rav David that he wore the heaviest coat he could obtain and he tried to find a seat where water wasn't seeping in, but he could not escape the rain. He remarked that he had learned certain daf of Masechta Yevamot under those conditions, and throughout his life, each time he reached those dafim, he would shiver involuntarily, apparently jarred by the association from his teenage years. That's an amazing little bit of psychology. You could probably use that for one of your classes. Half a century after those learning sessions in Shoshana Mladavid, there was some sort of problem plaguing the Yosef household, and Rabbanit Margalit asked Rav Ovadia whether she could summon a certain Mekubel who had a reputation for being able to look at the mezuzahs in the house and determine the source of the family's problems. Although Rav Ovadia did not place much faith in such Mekubelim, just remember who Rav Ovadia Yosef was. He didn't place such faith in those Mekubelim. He told the Rabbanit that if it would calm her, she could invite the Mekubel to their home. So the Mekubel arrived and began to examine the mezuzahs. After looking at a particular mezuzah, he said, "Who in the family has rheumatism?" Who has rheumatism? So, I do, Rav Ovadia replied. "This mezuzah is full of moisture," the Mekubel said. "That's causing the rheumatism." So the Mekubel then asked, "Is there a cross somewhere in the house? Is there a cross somewhere in here?" Rav Ovadia replied that he had visited the king of Spain, and the two had conversed at length, and the king had given him a gold medallion bearing the royal coat of arms, part of which was a cross. Spain is a very religious Christian nation. They have a cross on their coat of arms. The Mekubel told him that he had to destroy the medallion. "Suddenly," said Rav David, "Abba summoned me and asked me a Torah question. I told him what I thought would be the correct answer, and Abba then asked the Mekubel for his opinion. Rather than agreeing with what I had said, or keeping silent, the Mekubel offered his own answer, and we realized that he had no idea what he was talking about." And the subject that Rav Ovadia just asked him. When the Mekubel left, Rav Ovadia told his family members to place all the mezuzahs back on the doorposts. Put everything back. "What about the medallion?" Rav David asked. "I have a tshuva about that issue," Rav Ovadia said. Apparently it's in Yabia Omer, Chelek Yud, Yoredea, Yud Dalet. You want to go look it up if you have a coat of arms from Spain with a cross on it. Rav Ovadia replied, "Since the coat of arms is a symbol of honor, not a religious object, it's not forbidden to own it." So Rav Ovadia held. He then added that when the Rashba, this is a famous tshuva from the Rashba, was asked about a person who was able to predict the future and see hidden things, he replied that Ruach HaKodesh cannot rest on an Am Haaretz. This is a famous Rashba, Shaul's Tshuva's Rashba, that Ruach HaKodesh cannot be for a person who's Am Haaretz, who does not know Torah, and suggested, the Rashba did, that perhaps an impure spirit had entered the person's body. "I asked you a Torah question," Rav Ovadia explained to Rav David, "and then I posed the same question to this Mekubel to see if he knows how to learn. Since he doesn't, we don't need to heed anything he said. We don't have to listen to anything he said, we don't have to do it." "What about the mezuzah?" Rav David asked. Rav Ovadia said, "According to halacha, one is not allowed to bury a kosher mezuzah. And this is a kosher mezuzah with a little bit of moisture in it. Not only is this mezuzah kosher, it's mehudar. There's no reason to replace it. I know that I developed rheumatism as a result of learning in the freezing, wet Shoshana Mladavid library," he continued. "How can the rheumatism have anything to do with the moist mezuzah if I have had it for decades as a result of learning under those conditions?" That's where Ravadya ended. That's how we ended the story. So what do we take from that? Now again, this is from Rav David. It's not from Rav Avi Yosef himself. Rav David was the one who told over the story and told it over to the author of the Sefer Review to Heimowitz to tell it over to him. So what do we get from that? I learned something that I always knew, but I've never been able to put it down into wording. And really the truth is, I got this from Rav Yaakov Hillel. Those who know Rav Yaakov Hillel, he lives in Arz Yabira in Eretz Yisrael. He's the Rosh Shiva of a Sephardic yeshiva that's right by Kikar Shabbos. Or Yaakov Hillel told this over to a student that was with. The Kuvalim are greats. They do unbelievable things. There's no question that they know things that normal people don't know. But if there's no Torah involved, there's nothing to what they're saying. Literally nothing to what they're saying. Even when they're right, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. There's nothing to what they're saying, because it may be that they're getting their sources from impure areas, as Rav Ovadia Yosef himself said. It may be that they're guessing really well. Without a question, they're extremely smart. And when going to somebody like this, without knowing prior to the fact that he's a Talmud Chacham, without knowing that he knows how to learn, anybody can take good guesses or figure out what to do at any point in time. I'm going to mention something to you. About 6 or 7 years ago, I went to the library, Skokie Public Library, and I looked up Sfarim on palm reading, handwriting analysis, and different types of forehead reading, different things like that. It's in the Skokie Public Library. You can go find it yourself, but don't, and I'll explain why. I got those books. And I pulled them out because, I said, my wife was going to Skokie Public Library anyway. I'm not a big fiction reader, you know. It's not what I do, and nonfiction is boring. So I figured I might as well buy something that I'm really going to enjoy. So I really wanted to check this stuff out. This stuff sounded unbelievably cool. Can you imagine? I go up to people and just be like, oh, gosh, another chakras you missed without really... I could know it. I would know it. I'd be able to go with a guy and they're like, ooh, you have 2 years to live. That would be awesome. Right? That would be absolutely awesome. And I sat there and I took this one, and then I said to myself, what would my Rosh Hashiva say if I showed him the books that I just pulled out? What would my Rebbe say if I showed him what I was going to do? Right? There's no question. This stuff is so cool. It's unbelievably cool. But there's a line in the Torah for this. Tamim tia im Hashem Elokecha. To be tamim with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to constantly say to yourself, is this what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants for me at this time when it comes to these types of things? Now, I didn't. I took all three books and I didn't burn them. I took all three books and I returned them back to the library. I did not even open any of them. Did not open any of them. Because I said to myself, that's really not what it's going to be. Now, did I lose my chance to being a great Mekubal? It's possible. It's possible I lost my chance. That I'm no longer going to be a great Mekubal. I'm not able to tell you if you have rheumatism from your mezuzah. I'm not going to be able to do that. That's possible that I won't be able to do it. But there's more to it than just that. There are people who skip steps. They skip steps. They think to themselves that if I just go here, I'm going to be successful. And I'm going to start learning this stuff and it's going to be awesome. And I'm going to be so masliach in this type of a subject that I'm going to be the best one out there. I'm going to be the greatest Mekubal of all time. But there are steps to being a Mekubal. And what Ravadi Yosef is saying, what I'm trying to stress to everyone here, even if they know, even if they say this is what it is, there are steps to becoming a Mekubal and becoming somebody great. And the steps all go through Torah. And if it's not Torah, if you're just jumping the gun and reading a Zohar immediately, because the Zohar is so cool, and I can find out so many things from it, it starts with learning how to learn Be'im. That's how it starts. Learning what a Gemara really wants you to get out of the subject matter at hand. And once you get into the Gemara and you can figure it out well, then you start realizing what the Rishonim are really trying to say. And then you start realizing what the Achronim are trying to say. Whether you're in a method of Kopel or you're in a method of Halacha, whichever one you find better for yourself. Our yeshiva obviously concentrates on Kopel more than it does Halacha, right? But nonetheless, whichever way is there, working your way up little by little till eventually, when you finish other subjects, all the subjects that you need to know, then working slowly but surely on getting to understand things that are a little bit beyond the norm. Then working on that stuff, that's the way to go. You start off with Chumash and Rashi. You build up to the Ramban and the Rabbeinu B'chayim. You build up from there, the Rashbam, the Sephorno, the Chizkuni, the Ibn Ezra, to be able to understand those. You build up from that, to be able to start learning what the Achronim are trying to say in each given subject. Then, you move to the Or HaChaim HaKadosh and the Kli Yakar, and you understand what they're trying to say. Now, you can really get into those Sfarim that sound so cool when you start off, but it's only there after you worked so hard on the basics. So you're not jumping levels. You're stepping your way up and bringing yourself to the point where you can understand these things a little bit better.
Will I go to them again?
Yeah, I'm probably going to go to them again.
Yeah.
But a person has to understand that a Mekubal is only a Mekubal if he has Torah behind him. I don't know. I'm not a person who tests Mekubal. I don't do that. I wouldn't tell somebody that they're doing something wrong by going to Mekubal and finding out these certain things. That I'm not going to do. But to bypass signs, to bypass things and go through, it's coming from the Sitra Achra. We have to be very careful with how we treat this stuff and how it goes through. Be very careful with the different people that we see that claim to know certain things. There are people that know certain things and they might be getting it from the wrong sources. We have to look for people that are Talmidei Chacham. Talmidei Chachamim first, and the Mekubalim second. A person who's a Mekubal first, and a Talmid Chacham almost not at all. Be very wary of such a person. Do not go near such a person. Do not allow yourself to be swayed or pulled in by that type of a Chachma. Because that type of a Chachma is dangerous, and it has terrible, terrible ramifications for you, and unfortunately for Klal Yisrael. I feel like that's the lesson that I learned from this. As the one, the Lamed that had the Lamed in the wrong way, you know, that thing, it's not a psul and mezuzah. So that mezuzah I don't think I'm taking down. The Lamed that's puzzle, okay, what are you going to do? The two Lameds that are touching each other, that's puzzle. That you got to take down. To think to yourself, what is the best thing for Klal Yisrael? The best thing for Klal Yisrael is not having Randy McCubone there going around yelling out, mezuzahs. It's not going to be it. Think to yourself, what do you want with this? And for you yourself to know, build it up in steps and levels and get yourself little by little to the point where you can understand, okay, now we're ready for the next step. Now we're ready for the next idea. That's it, everybody. Have a great